The story you're about to hear has no ending. That is to say, whatever end will be, has not happened yet. This is a story of one guy, myself, trying to fulfill his dream. But in a lot of ways, this is a story about thousands and thousands of people. Entrepreneurs, inventors, and relentless creatives. It's about the people with an idea who had the audacity to walk to the edge of their comfort zone and jump into the unknown to pursue it. Or at least, this is a case study of my attempt to do just that. This story is being captured and crafted in real time, which means however the story ends, you and I will discover it together. I'm Jeremiah, and you're listening to Over the Edge. I want to make a quick note and say that this story, to the best of my ability, is told with honesty and authenticity. All the best stories are. I also want to say that much of the concept for this show came from Alex Bloomberg and his podcast Startup. If you've never heard it, I highly recommend it. As I said at the beginning, this story is being told in real time. I don't know what's going to happen in the next episode. But before we talk about the present, I need to tell you a story from the past. It was a sunny Tuesday evening in July of 2020 when I dropped by my parents' house. In amongst the seemingly countless amounts of issues plaguing the world at large, my world was about to take on a change of its own. I remember the conversation vividly. After a collection of pleasantries, I told them that I had an idea and I wanted their opinion. Now, this was not new for them. In fact, pretty much all my friends were familiar with my ideas. There was the breakfast-themed YouTube show.
Good morning. Welcome to Breakfast with Jeremiah. I am Jeremiah, and today we're going to be eating some cereal for you.
A holiday-themed meme band I called the Holiday Boys. And then there's the time I taught my non-musical friend to be a rapper. Most of the time, there'd be an eyes-rolled posture towards the idea, knowing it was likely just another short-lived way I could exercise my creativity. But this one was different. This one had higher stakes. I told them I wanted to start a business. I wanted to sign a lease on an empty recording studio nearby, and I wanted to launch Caffeinated Records, a hybrid business that was equal parts coffee shop and recording studio. There's a couple reasons I'm telling you this story, and we'll get to more of these reasons later on. But for now, I want to paint the picture of a guy with larger-than-life ideas without the means to justify it. Here's the scene. I had no college degree, knew nothing about starting or running a business, had a low income from my part-time barista job, and was living with my aunt to keep expenses down. On top of that, I had produced music for only myself and a small handful of friends, and had an intermediate skill level at best. And yet, my imagination was always 10 steps ahead. You see, as I mapped it out, this recording studio was phase one in a three-phase process that would ultimately end in a 6,000-square-foot music and coffee house built from the ground up and positioned in a lively downtown. It would be the social hub of the town, a place where you could feel like you were a part of the music industry just by walking in and ordering a cup of coffee, a place where the Nashville music scene and the Everyman coffee shop overlapped, an idea that, in all of my research, had never been done before. You see what I mean by larger than life?
This is official walkthrough one of Caffeinated Records as it exists right now. The date is October 3rd, 2020. We've been open for just over a month, and this is the stuff.
But it's going to be really good. Caffeinated Records started with humble beginnings and a reckless amount of ignorant determination. The first 3 months proved to be a crash course in all things business. Should I set up an LLC or a sole proprietorship? How do I set up business insurance? I need to design a website. I gotta get some equipment. Need to build a portfolio. Build hype on social media. And oh gosh, the clock is ticking. I gotta make some money. It felt like an endless rat race, but I loved it. Within a couple months, Ben, my brother-in-law, offered to jump in the boat with me. Ben was a lifelong video guy with a Peter McKinnon aesthetic. He also was a big ideas guy, and together, we formed a sort of creative powerhouse. Or at least, that's how it felt.
The first year was like, kind of building and like a lot of excitement of like what we could do.
That's Ben, just in case that wasn't clear.
How do we build something actually cool and meaningful? I think we thought a lot more intentionally about what we wanted to do as far as like the culture that we wanted to like maintain within like knowing that like we're probably not going to make money and just like break even, but we're like trying things. I think that we also had a lot of things we wanted to do. Like it was a studio, but like I'm a video editor. And so like, how does that fit into doing music? We like all of this, so we're just gonna do all of it.
There's so much I could tell you about the hills and valleys of Caffeinated Records, but that's a story for another podcast. I just wanna stick to some key points here, because this story isn't about the past, it's about the present. Still, it's important for me to lay out the groundwork for the road that brought me to where I am right now. What you're hearing is a glimpse of the Caffeinated Records 1 year anniversary party. There was dinner, decor, merch, and live music. Toward the end, I stood up and gave a speech, thanking everyone for their help in getting us through the first year. I went on to cast the vision for the future. As usual, it was a big vision, with talk of building the team and moving into phase two, launching our own brand of coffee. I also left my job to work on the studio full time. It was all coming together. Despite all its perceived wins, there were some issues underneath that set maybe the most pervasive tone inside the walls of the studio. Money was tight. Honestly, that was an understatement. With the increase of expenses from equipment upgrades to additional operating costs, overhead was steadily rising. And on top of that, we were finding it continually challenging to find the clientele we would need in order to pay the bills. To be fully honest, a lot of this was my fault. I had chosen to approach the business from a faith-driven perspective. In other words, I would take time to try to figure out what God was telling me to do. And if I felt like He wanted me to make a certain decision, I stood up and made it happen. Being a person of faith, I can't say I fully regret this decision because I think in a lot of ways, it's an admirable display of your trust in God. That being said, it also created an incredibly volatile business structure. It was commonplace to start the week with several $1,000 worth of bills due the next day and about $200 in the bank account. This structure, even in the best case, created a culture riddled with financial anxiety. And I wasn't the only one impacted by this decision. I had Ben to look out for. And within a couple months, I'd take another leap of faith and hire a third member to the team.
I used AI to generate lyrics for me and I gave it the prompt of frogs.
This is Lucas. If by chance you were one of the people following Caffeinated Records' journey, you should recognize him, because almost overnight, he became the most public-facing member of the team. And there was good reason for that.
I said that it's supposed to be EDM lyrics. The following song is the result.
What sets my dance up from frog to destiny? What sparks the light in everyone you meet? So, double up the frog, double up the frog, double up the order.
Lucas was fun, energetic, and stupid creative. To this day, he's possibly the most talented producer I've ever met. He caught my vision for a music and coffee house, and I brought him in as the studio director. That meant that all the music coming out of the studio, he was the guy making it happen. The year that followed brought some of the best and most beautiful moments of my life, and also some of the hardest challenges I'd ever experienced. Whatever volatility we were experiencing before, it shot through the roof now. But I justified all my decisions through some personal negotiations. I mean, the value of our work just increased, so the money should increase as well. There are now more hands to get the word out and do what we need to do. Besides, we had big visions and that meant I had to take big risks. I mean, if you're gonna shoot for the moon, you need to move fast to get there. So despite my concerns, I continued to run forward as fast as I could. And I didn't know it then, but this volatility would soon get the better of me.
I remember you handing me the paper and it said studio director. I knew that like I've always wanted to do music full time. Even though like the pay wasn't like enough to move out, like I knew that I wanted to try it. And so I did. I remember showing my parents like the studio desk and the tracking room and everything like that. And I was like, this is my desk right now. This is where I get to work. And it was really, the beginning stages was kind of almost like a really good fever dream, you know?
We're barely making any money, so I don't know how this person's gonna survive. This person has to be a very, like, I'm okay, like, seeing something grow. So I think I was worried about someone else, like, being okay with, like, suffering a little bit for potentially a better thing than just going and getting a job. And then when I met Lucas, he fit really well with our personalities. He could have fun and hang with us and was like someone like I enjoyed working with versus like being frustrated working with.
2022 was a wild year. Despite the volatility, we were a group of fighters. Ben was running point on all video projects and managing social media. Lucas was working with all our recording clients, and I spent all my time overseeing projects and bringing in work in any way I could. And for the most part, it was working.
We had these artists that were very small, and this was their first shot at like figuring out what their sound is. And it was really rewarding seeing them get excited about their sound.
That thing Lucas said about people getting excited about their sound, we began to realize this was the purpose of Caffeinated Records. And we created this commercial to tell our community about our mission, to help you make music that you're proud of.
I've always felt more connected to music than like any other part. Like, I was never good at sports. The only thing I knew was music. I was the band nerd. And I thought living in that and like connecting with my own music the way that I connect with other people's music sounded so intriguing.
When I'm working with people in making music, I know that it's gonna be great if they're just willing to come alongside me in making that happen. Because I know that really powerful things can happen when someone hears a song that they can relate to.
When you are, you know, really focusing in on, you know, getting the perfect take, you really feel like you are kind of at home.
Like, you guys were really receptive. You guys listened to what we were going for, that sound and vibe we were going for, and you did everything you could to get as close as you could to that.
At the end of the day, the thing that's most important to us is that you walk away with music that you think, well, yeah, this sounds like me, and that you're walking away with music that you're proud of because it's me. The whole joke is that, like, when you're in the music studio as a musician, talking with your producer is like a therapy session. Like, and I knew that. There were some conversations with Megan and with Billy and with a few others that were just like, yeah, life's hard. And I was like, life is hard. Let's write about that. And, like, it was really fun. But Diane, like, there were moments where, like, she would sob and I'd have to give her a hug and say, like, let's take a break. This sweet 60, 70-year-old lady and a 24-year-old self-conscious little doof. Like, it was such a unique coming together of worlds. Even though, like, it was not like a Grammy moment. It wasn't a moment where, like, oh my gosh, this artist is blowing up and it's me. I don't think it's gotten more than like 7 streams, but like that is gold to me.
I could spend the rest of this episode and probably the next 10 talking about the beautiful stories that came out of our work with our clients. The music we were making wasn't just technically proficient. There was something deeper happening. We were stepping into people's lives, entrusted with their stories, and then we put our minds together to create something beautiful that embodied who they were in ways that they couldn't put into words beforehand. It was powerful. Unfortunately, in spite of all the work we were bringing in, the bills were still higher, and slowly, we began to enter some stormy weather.
I don't think I really saw it necessarily ending. I think that I saw what the format was as ending. Like, I could see the frustration in Lucas.
I never stopped believing in Caffeinated, but I also never stopped worrying, because my dad's an accountant, and I had just decided, I was like, they were worried about me in the job not paying enough, and I was like, but don't worry, as it grows, if this, like, blows up and we do make coffee and we do this, like, I'm in line to get paid very well, and I wanted to see it through.
I was sort of very much in the present of, like, I'm just going to do what needs to be done now and then let the cards play out where they do. And so, therefore, I don't think I was really worried about it ending and wasn't really worried on a financial state.
I began to do everything I could to regain some momentum. I started my workdays at 5 a.m. and would send emails out to every local band I could find. I started going to shows and going out drinking with the band afterwards to build relationships. Day in and day out, I was trying everything I could think of. And still, nothing was working.
I think it was right around that time that you were like, hey, we haven't had clients pay us in a minute. We are having a hard time finding new clients. I'll pay you eventually, but I can't pay you this week.
That week became a month. And that month became 2 months. Then three. I remember standing in my office with a stack of payroll checks. I started counting them out. It was about $13,000. It was in that moment that I had the sinking feeling, this isn't working. Over the next 2 days, I talked with both Ben and Lucas, and it became clear to all three of us, it was time to close Caffeinated Records. This is really where I wanted to land. What do you do when you put everything you have into something and it's not enough? How do you move on? How can you pick up and keep living your life? If everything you had was not enough, doesn't that mean that you're not enough? In the days that followed, I spent a lot of time thinking and writing and processing everything. I wrote a lot in my journal. This is an excerpt from one of those journal entries. I'll be honest, I didn't see it ending like this. There are times in life where you go through hardship, but you push through, knowing that there's a light on the other side and you need to press on until you get there. There are other times when you get hit with the sinking feeling that this just isn't working. And it's time to shut it down. I experienced the latter on Friday. Did I miss something? Did I fall? Was this all a waste of time? God provided all of those other times, why not now? Am I just running scared? Should I have made this decision sooner? This is like 5% of the questions I've wrestled with over the last 2 days. Caffeinated Records was the whole thing. My purpose, my passion, my classroom for my life lessons of faith and leadership. The point of my faith was to see the impossible made possible. Right? Right?
The world may feel like it's falling down around me. My heart may feel like it's breaking without mercy. In my mind, may flood it uncontrollably. But every time I cry out, my God, you rescue me.
I remember exactly where I was. We were in my garage. When you told me, I think I felt relief. But I think my relief was based on you and being like, I see this as killing you to try to figure out how to pay us, and you genuinely feel bad. And therefore, like, I was almost more relieved that, like, you had made that decision. It seemed like a weight a little bit off your shoulder of, like, okay, I'm not responsible for these two other people that signed up for a thing that I'm excited about.
It was weird because, like, it was one half incredibly satisfying and one half incredibly painful. It was like pulling a sword that it was, like, stuck in my stomach, out of my stomach, and being like, sweet, I can heal now, but I'm bleeding. The day you told me, I cried a lot. Went to my girlfriend at the time, and we went and got food, and I just, every now, I would just kind of doze out, tear up, and then I'd muster some strength up, and I'd move on. It did haunt me for a bit. I really felt like, yeah, I failed. It feels like it's because I didn't do enough.
I think we had all kind of gotten so stressed that like the excitement got left behind. And so it was like, oh, we get to be excited again about like future stuff and dream.
I mess up a little bit more than you would like, but you're patient with me. It may hurt a little bit longer than I'd like, but I'll be patient with you. I will trust in your time.
In case you're asking this question, yes, the first episode of this show about chasing your dreams is about the death of a dream, at least in part. I think maybe the hardest part of closing the studio was telling people the story when they would ask what happened. It felt like I just killed something so close to me, and now I have to revisit the tombstone and spell out its death in detail over and over again. I felt like I'd failed at the thing I'd put blood, sweat, and literal tears into building. But at the same time, I felt relieved. Like, for the first time in a long time, I felt like I could slow down and take a breath. We'll be right back.
I think that the American dream is dead. So we can start with that, and that it's hard to make a living just in general, even if you're doing something you don't enjoy. And so I think that's really hard. Like, everything to do to be your own business is really hard. And therefore, you almost have to fall into this machine of other creative industries that are already set up to do that.
After I closed the studio, I worked like crazy to tie things up, sell some equipment, and settle my debts. I vowed to Ben and Lucas and to myself that paying off that $13,000 would be my top priority. And within about 3 months, I sold enough gear and made enough money to pay everything off.
It was just like, okay, well, this little pet project or thing we tried isn't working, but that doesn't mean we'll rework it into something that works better. Like, I felt like individually, each one of us would be fine regardless what happened, and we would learn from it. And I think we did.
And I remember, like, I would, like, sit in my room all day, work out, try to write music, and then go to bed, work out, try to write music. And I just, there are days where I just didn't want to leave my room. And I would go to bed at like 10 and fall asleep at 5 in the morning. And like, it was like 4 or 5 days out of the week. And it was hard. It was scary because I was like, okay, I have clarity on like what's next, but I'm scared of what's next because I don't want to fail again, you know?
Lucas and Ben both landed jobs at different media companies in the area. As for me, I started working as a videographer at my church shortly before we closed the studio. At the time, I was attempting to lighten my financial burden on the studio, and while it didn't do enough to save the business, it meant I also had a job to fall back on. I felt like I needed my life to stabilize a bit, so I took this time and lived what I imagined to be the standard American life. Work, socialize, and go home. It was peaceful, but I began to feel this sense of gloom around me, and it lingered. I think the reality of the loss of Caffeinated Records hadn't fully set in yet. I found myself living with a haze over my eyes. It felt like I'd gone through so much and had such intense, conflicting emotions that they kind of canceled each other out, and now I just felt depleted. My therapist identified it as depression. Being a musician, I processed it by writing a song. I never finished the song, but here's a clip of the demo that I created. I called the song Apathy.
I've not been myself lately. It seems that time will crawl so quickly. If it's never gonna change, I'm the only one to blame. Running back into the same old, same old, same old, same old. I've not been myself lately. Apathy.
Called the War of Art talks a lot about the muse, and sometimes like when you want to be creative and you're just not, or like you get creativity and you don't have the opportunity to like let that just play out, and you're like, well, I have all these other things I have to do. Catching it at the right moment is like this golden moment where it's like, oh, I've got the creativity and I also have the time and I also have the project that I'm working on to be creative in. And that doesn't always like come together in the right moment where it's like, oh, I got to be creative and I have nothing and a deadline's due. And I think that creativity gets a bad rap. People are like, just go get a job. And it's like, well, I don't want to do that. I'm better than that. I want to do what I want to do and enjoy it and enjoy my life. And that is being creative.
In the course of working through my mental health, I also began building a relationship with a girl named Annie. Over the course of the next year and a half, her title would change from girlfriend to fiance to wife. Looking back, I think this is where the story starts to take a turn. This relationship brought out a lot of beautiful things in my life. Annie was an incredibly supportive person while I figured out who I was and what was next for me. But beyond that, our relationship brought with it the opportunity to step into probably the most ambitious creative endeavor I'd ever taken on, the proposal. As with so many of my stories, there is so much detail I could get into about the proposal and how meticulously I planned it out, but I'll just paint a broad picture for now. Maybe I'll tell the full story later. Just imagine that guy from the beginning with larger-than-life ideas, but now with the means and about 6 months to make it happen. Here's the quick list of things I did. Wrote and recorded a song. Brought in a string quartet and recorded a choir. Shot a video by moving a grand piano into the forest. I learned how to mix music in 7.1 Dolby Atmos surround sound. I got her ring size by getting a mold of her hand, and I even recreated our first date, going so far as to hire the same Elvis impersonator who performed a year ago, to the day. I thought through every nuance, every scenario, and I put creative thought into every moment to make sure the event was perfect. The results? Well... Why am I telling you all this? I feel like I needed to paint a picture of myself. A guy with over-the-top ideas who's put both feet into things and failed miserably. A guy who got knocked down. A guy who continued to dream in big ways, even if he was scared to step back out. I think the proposal stirred something in me. It was a reminder that there's still a relentless creativity hiding inside. Ideas began to spin in my mind of one day trying again. Maybe it wasn't Caffeinated Records, but there had to be something I could build that fulfilled this creative itch inside me and was maybe a bit more sustainable. But even though I would dream up big ideas, there was also something else inside me. Something new. Something holding me back. It took me a minute to identify it, but I finally figured it out. It was fear. There's something Lucas said a couple minutes ago that I think really speaks to this. Here's that clip again.
I would go to bed at like 10 and fall asleep at 5 in the morning, and like 4 or 5 days out of the week. And it was hard. It was scary because I was like, okay, I have clarity on like what's next, but I'm scared of what's next because I don't want to fail again, you know?
There it was. I don't want to fail again.
You know, I heard a quote. I can't remember the exact quote, so I'm going to summarize it. Certainty is kind of an illusion. Certainty is a security blanket that you don't really get, because if you get certain about something and then the blanket gets ripped out from under you, it hurts even more. So I think it's best to learn to live without certainty and take risks. And the best way for you to know if something's going to work is for you to try it.
At this point in the story, we're up to just a handful of months ago. I spent a lot of time processing, and I convinced myself that my fear was actually me being responsible. After all, I've got a wife now. I can't just take risks that flippantly anymore. Besides, I like my job. My life is good. Slowly, though, life became more expensive. So much so that the income at my job was about half what I needed. I was doing extra work over and above my job just to break even, but it was not sustainable. It felt like I was in a helicopter that was going down, and I wasn't sure if what I had in my hand was a parachute or a backpack. But if I wait to find out, a helicopter is going to crash. So my only choice is to jump out and pray I did the right thing. Still, I wrestled with this decision for a couple months. Here's the point. If you keep focusing on your mistakes from the past, you'll never be any more than the sum of your worst moments. And on the flip side, if you choose to see your life as a crash course in the life you want to live, and you're only halfway through it, then you will see everything as an opportunity to grow. I didn't realize I was holding on to the mistakes at Caffeinated Records until I tried to succeed again. A good friend and mentor named John Maxwell described this perfectly. He did so by writing a poem. This poem was actually the inspiration for the title of the show, and I thought it fitting to let him close us out by reading this poem. So without further ado, here is John Maxwell's The Edge.
One day, I realized that everything I learned when I left the comfort for the edge. At 13, the edge was the dance floor I could not cross. With all the eyes upon me, my confidence was lost. Till pounding pulse and sweaty palms pushed me across the floor to talk to the freckled-faced red-haired girl standing by the door. At 18, the edge was sitting on my bed one last time before I go, to leave behind the safety of the only place I'd ever known. Heavy bags with luggage tags carried everything I own, and yet they could not carry the feeling I was home. It was courage at the edge to walk out the front door and leave behind the company I spent a decade working for, to walk to the parking lot an unfamiliar path. But the only way was forward. There was no way back. A momentary panic found me in the car, but I remembered all I am and how I'd come this far. It was loving at the edge to stay beside my mother's bed and hold her hands as bit by bit the cancer spread. I whispered to her words of love and stories of her life, of all she meant to all of us, on better days and better nights. And finally came the silence that told me it was time. I whispered to her one last prayer, kissed her hand, and said, goodbye. Time and time and time again, I ventured to the edge, fighting off the voices of panic in my head. In the comfort of the middle, there's no chance for growth or gain, no need for bravery or heroes, no courage, no medals, no pain. All the things worth having are waiting at the edge, guarded by the demons of fears and monsters in your head. At the edge, you have a moment as you stare across the gap to bravely press on forward or timidly turn back. All along life's journey, you'll leave a lot of things behind, but at the edge, when all is said, is where your life's defined.
I was certain on the shore, I was following your footsteps, but I don't see them anymore. And I'm so far from where I started.
A good friend told me that everything we want lies on the other side of fear. It's crazy because I knew I'd done the work. I ran the numbers, I talked with mentors, journaled, prayed, and overanalyzed every single detail, and still, the edge felt terrifying. I even felt like life was pushing me to a place where the platform under my feet was crumbling and staying in place was not an option, and still, the edge was terrifying. I'd hoped that, like, in the right circumstances, it would get easier, but it never did. No matter how much you prepare, process, and anticipate, the edge will always look like a daunting chasm when you're on the outside looking in.
I'll receive the waves with joy, knowing I won't be destroyed, but I'll become a little more like Christ, my Savior.
My hope is that you'll find something deeper in this story than an artist's thinly veiled attempt at self-promotion. I hope that as you hear my story, you hear yourself in it a little bit too. Maybe there's a dream you've been holding on to that you've nearly lost sight of behind all the fear. I hope that my story can play a small role in rekindling that fire that's hiding inside of you. Maybe if I can do something bold, you can too. I hope so, because on October 1st, 2024, I left my job and jumped over the edge. Production of Sleepy Dog Creative. It's inspired by the work of Alex Bloomberg. It was written, hosted, and edited by Jeremiah Shoemaker. Our theme song is OK by Quinn from Space. This episode's closing song is Kiss the Waves by Harmony Lebeuf. Additional songs by Daniel Yates and Emily Catherine. Music composition by Jeremiah Shoemaker and Lucas Hibden. Graphic design by Kahootly Alvarado. Special thanks to John Maxwell. If you enjoyed this show and you want to see it continue, spread the word. With your help, this show is just getting started. If you'd like to support the show in other ways, consider leaving us a rating and hit follow so you'll be notified when we drop new episodes. For more updates on Sleepy Dog Creative, you can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok at Sleepy Dog Creative, or visit our website at www.sleepy.dog. Tune in next time for the next chapter of Over the Edge.